EFTM. Tech, cars, lifestyle.
This is the EFTM podcast with Trevor Long.
EFTM.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the EFTM podcast. Great to have you company this week. I'm actually in cloudy, dreary London for an Apple event this week. We'll have full details of that on Two Blokes Talking Tech come Wednesday your time. So if you're listening in the Two Blokes feed, you'll probably hear this at the same time as you hear that. But worry about that another time for EFTM podcast listeners. I'll pump this out on Monday afternoon because it's just happening. It's when I've got time. Tomorrow's a very busy day here in London with Apple, and there's a lot to get done. For that reason, no calls this week. We'll get back to calls next week. If you have a tech question, a tech problem, something you want to brag about, you bought, or you're just worried about something that you want to buy, or you want to know how it works, you want some advice, doesn't matter. 0477 657 657. Send me a text, send me a WhatsApp. 0477 657 657. We'll get you on the show, or you can send an email via the website, EFTM.com. Just click on Ask Trev. Now, this show is dedicated to the digital ID. And I want to bring you into some of my thinking here. First and foremost, that was spurred on by my next guest, Greta, who is an unbelievable mind when it comes to the idea of digital ID, and is building a business around that very thing with you, your security, your privacy in mind. And it's eye-opening stuff, and I want you to hear it straight from her mouth. So we'll talk about that shortly. But that stems from the privacy breach that occurred last week, is the way to describe it. It wasn't a hack. It wasn't really a data breach. It was more a weird privacy breach. Rewind, a website was created. It allowed you to search for your name. And if your name was on record, shall we say, then it would show what data they had. It would show you the RSL you'd signed into, and it would redact essentially all of your private details except your suburb and birth year. So it was a way of saying, hey, we've got your info, right? We've got your info. Bazinga. We know where you are. We know who you are. Now, interestingly, the claims on the website were that a third-party developer, a Philippines-based developer, had access to this information, and they hadn't been paid. And so you got this sense that this was a Philippines developer that was annoyed about not being paid, and they'd leaked the information to get their point across. Fast forward 24 hours after the story broke, and it went wild, by the way. Fast forward, and police in Western Sydney arrested a 46-year-old man in relation to this and charged them broadly with blackmail, okay? There's a list of actual charges. Feel free to research that. So it was very, I think, clear to me, without knowing for sure, that this was actually more a case of some sort of corporate extortion. And this, we don't know. This person may have been an employee and simply had a copy of the data. This person may have been a third-party contractor and also had a copy of the data, which actually does still raise the question, why did this company have any access to the data, and why did this third party have access to data? Because if you go back and rewind here and think in an unrelated, not related to this specific story, but just think about signing into a registered club. You put your driver's license in, or you scan your driver's license, whatever you do, and they know your driver's license number, date of birth, address, whatnot. And they have a photo of you, plus they take a photo of you on their own camera, and they have your signature when you sign in, right? That information, the club, maybe, which is a whole other question, maybe needs that information on store. But why does anyone else? If you're the developer of that system, surely you just need access to the code on the system. Why would you have access to all the data on the system? So that's a question we need to explore down the track. And then even if you are an employee of that company, if there's some reason they need that data, why do you physically have access to that? So a bunch of things to explore down the track on that. Now, a little update, which I don't think has been reported anywhere, but if you go to the website that was created for this weird stunt and you search for your name, my name was part of this, the records now actually show something different. Instead of showing me my Hornsby RSL club logo and my address details redacted with my suburb. It now says in red writing, no private data was actually disclosed publicly and no hacking occurred. All records have already been removed. We thank you for listening. The whistle has been heard. So this is a case of a corporate whistleblower. And I think in some ways, you might suggest that the whistle has been heard. We're sitting here thinking, well, maybe there is a question here about who has access to this data. And we should be investigating that. This poor simpleton, though, has now got to work out how they avoid jail time because of what they published and the words that they published and the threats that they made. Did they make any threats? I don't know. Courts will have to decide that. Now, the other thing the website now says is find records on white pages instead. And then it gives you a link to the white pages. Now, buddy, champion, 46-year-old man from Fairfield, Western Sydney, I'm not listed in the white pages. So if you're trying to argue that you simply took records from the white pages and associated them with their local RSL club, you're wrong because I'm not in the white pages, nor is most people. So there wouldn't be a million people in the white pages, would there, anymore? I think that's baloney. So this goose is obviously out on bail for his alleged crimes and still has access to this website. I think the police should have ordered bail with no access to computers or the internet. Might do himself more damage online. But it will be fascinating to play that one out. I think correctly there were claims made on that website that need to be seen as some form of extortive claims allegedly made by this person who has been charged. But I don't know. I don't know how, on what threshold they'll be brought to justice. But I also think, with the greatest respect to the company involved, who I have tried not to name too much other than in my original article, that company and all companies providing this kind of service must now look very, very hard inwardly to determine if they are correctly storing data, accessing data, and if people within their organization correctly have access to the data. Because that's the risk. That's the risk. That too much data is available to too many people without the need or consent of the users. That will be the follow-up. Once this court, it could take a year, but once that goes through, we really need to make sure the government's having a conversation around that specific question of, should they have even had that data? The time will tell. Whistle has been heard, and I think old mate is absolutely, pardon my language, but shitting himself because there's no way he expected to get caught that quickly. So he'll face court for those alleged crimes, and we'll wait and see what happened. My advice to people who were worried about it last week is don't be worried about it because I don't believe the data got out of that person's hands, but I think we should be asking questions about whether or not there are overseas developers for any company with data on hand and if those developers have access to it. And if so, why? All right, you're listening to the EFTM podcast. Get in touch, 0477 657 657. Let's talk more about data breaches and the digital ID. Spent a lot of last week talking about data, privacy, breaches, hacks, words that mingle together poorly, and it always gets attention, which is in part a good thing. It's in part a very good thing that it gets a lot of attention when there's a breach of any sort or a concern of any sort. Now, when it comes to the club's issue of last week, it should be clear that a man has been arrested and charged, so I can't really talk about that specific case, and it's a weird one anyway. But in simple terms, we had a 24-hour period where we thought that a million people's data had been exposed online. And in theory, in some way, the data is exposed, and this incident kind of raises bigger questions about how many people can see a piece of data and how many people should be able to see a piece of data. But I got an email from someone who I'd had a couple of interactions with, and the subject of the email got me straight away. It was Clubs New South Wales Breach Heartbreak, and that was from Greta Menzies, co-founder of My Data Boss. And Greta joins me on the line right now. G'day, Greta. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, Trevor. How are you?
I'm well, but I felt your heartbreak because you live and breathe the future of this space. So before we unpack things like digital ID and what it means and how people should be positive about it broadly, talk to me about My Data Boss. What was your idea when you co-founded this business, My Data Boss?
Well, alongside many Australians, I felt frustrated and heartbroken, let down by businesses. But unlike many Australians, I'm also a data scientist and data governance expert who works in the back of a lot of these large enterprises who have been experiencing issues. Mm. So I sort of got a unique perspective of both ends of the spectrum. And just born out of a sheer determination to tackle this glaring vulnerability faced by consumers, but in a way that also helps to alleviate the business pain points so that there's no excuse in terms of adoption. And really, you know, being a mum to two beautiful girls and not wanting to sit idly by and leave them with a mess of an online landscape, I co-founded My Data Boss, and we're in the business of making consumers and businesses feel confident when sharing information. So we're a full, secure and convenient sensitive information exchange, of which digital ID, of course, is a component, and that's why I'm acutely aware of the current and emerging landscape in that space, and I'm excited to chat to you more about that today.
But, where's your business at, though? Because it feels like you're dabbling in the future while kind of trying to create it. So how do you crack the big time when, you know, things like digital ID aren't in effect yet? Are you currently working with businesses to essentially guide them and steer them on their own data security in an effort to be ready for this digital ID future?
100%. So we've taken a very pragmatic approach. I mean, the government digital ID solution, we've made great progress getting the digital ID bill passed through the Senate recently. But even so, that's going to be, it still needs to go through the House of Reps, and then it's still at least 2 years away from that point. And we don't have time to sit around it and wait. And if you look at the solutions coming out of government and coming out of the banks, they've both recognised that there needs to be choice and there needs to be a convergence of multiple players in this space. And that's where My Data Boss comes into play. We provide an independent way that consumers can create a digital ID now so that we can start having immediate effects on reducing the volume of sensitive information in circulation. Mm. We've had to be very nuanced with our bill to allow for the, I guess, realities of what's happening in the back end of businesses. And what I mean by that is things like, you know, sometimes it takes regulations a while to catch up. And so a lot of businesses are still legally required.
And that's a really important point, isn't it, right? It's all well and good for us to say, well, I'm not going to hand over this. With the club stuff, I've had fascinating conversation with a lot of people saying, actually, you know, you don't have to put your driver's license in. There's no legislation. It's the opposite. There's no legislation that requires them to do that. It's just a streamlining. It's a simplicity thing. You can simply ask to sign a piece of paper and have them sign a driver's license. But if you try to sign up for a new mobile phone, there's absolutely no doubt that an Australian telco will ask for your date of birth, your license number, your passport and different things because they're required to get that information from you today. But we kind of need, and that's a challenge where we need that legislation to say, we require you to know who the account holder is at the point of creating the account. But instead of saying we require you to keep, you know, a record of their identity on file for 7 years, we need that legislation, that ruling to be more, we need you to have validated that and proved that through either a physical record or a digital ID. Is that part of the problem is there's so much of, you know, government, let alone businesses, that need to work in tandem, in parallel, over the years ahead to get to a point of digital safety?
Yeah, definitely. But it can be done faster. I mean, we've been working hard. My hair's a lot grayer. I'm working on the build of my data boss to bring it to market. But, you know, we're built, we're piloted, we're ready to roll out. We've piloted in the legal sector. We've building a pipeline to implement in other organisations. And are excited to continue that work because it is going to be a collective effort. And the digital ID component, it's fantastic that we can provide an independent way to do that now because, you know, there's always going to be people who feel a bit uneasy about government or banking solutions where I think it stems from that idea that maybe they'll build a profile on them that can be used or misused in different ways.
Well, how do we prevent that broadly, though? Because that profile building is the issue, right? That's what the fear is. If we go to the extreme level of fear, I look at it two ways and I go, there's the profile building. People are worried the government's going to know too much and da-da-da-da and knock back a request for Centrelink because you own a car or whatever. But then there's the commercial business side of things and say, okay, so if we look at your business, how are you not monetizing my data? Like, how do we sell to the average Joe the fact that you should trust a third-party digital ID provider? And, you know, what's the business model there? Is it because you're providing so many back-end services to banks and legal firms and whatever that those are the people that indirectly pay for your business to thrive and the end user is simply able to use it as part of their daily work?
That's 100%. It's really important that these solutions are made available for free to consumers. Our business model is a subscription service for businesses, but what we've been able to do is bring to market a product where they can access these services in a very cost-effective way. I think a lot of the boardroom conversations and conversations in the tech space worry that, we've got these legacy systems and it's going to be expensive to put solutions in place. It doesn't need to be. Not in 2024 and the access that we have to all of this state-of-the-art technology. And that's what we really focused on, being able to let other organisations take advantage of a well-built-out enterprise technical infrastructure.
So a business, whether they're enormous, whether they're niche, let's use my business, okay? So EFTM is a website, but we're also a community, right? So we have an app and people can sign up in the app for an ID. Let's just call it a membership number, right? It's a free club. But to sign up, you do need to hand over your email address, phone number, state. I think that's what we asked for, and name. So are you saying to me that in a point in time in the very near future, I could be EFTM as a business could pay a subscription to my data boss. So I could say I have, 5,000 or less or between 5,000 and 10,000, whatever, and there's a different subscription cost per, the amount of records that I have probably. And then in our sign up system or on website or whatever, I simply say to people, sign up for an ID, click here, and it simply says, just present your my data boss, and that simply validates that it's a real person and hands me back essentially maybe a name and a tick or a name that they choose to give me and a tick saying it's real, we validated it and we've done the back end work to validate that person.
That's correct. And, it's volume-based tiered pricing. So for less than the price of a coffee a day, you can make sure that your business is safe and that you're doing the right things by your customers. I mean, businesses have to realise that the future customer will only deal with businesses that they can trust. Mm. And we're really helping businesses preserve and build trust by reducing the volume of that private information that's in circulation. Just think, now we don't need to keep seeing that in the news. Businesses hoping for the hack lottery are going to get destroyed. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Hacks, they're a part of life. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. And it's time for corporate Australia to recognise that protecting customer data is the pinnacle of trust. And if they don't, then their competitors will.
Let's explore my example again a little further. There's two possible pieces of information that I do want to, I don't need to retain it, but I might need to have access to it. And that is, if someone chooses in that sign-up process to receive my email newsletter, they tick a box in the sign-up process, will your system, because they've said yes, they've ticked a box, will your system send me that so that I can add it to my database? And likewise, if I need their phone number, so in my database, I just need a name and a phone number, because if they win a prize, I need to ring them and say congratulations. So there's obviously some data that I want to have, or what, you know, how do I as a business access information about my customers when needed, but not store it and be vulnerable?
Yeah, definitely. So with digital IDs, it's not just about digitizing your driver's license or your passport. It's about making or creating different ways that the everyday person can verify themselves. So, for example, instead of having to give you their driver's license with their date of birth, their name, their address, their wet signature, we can issue a credential just to say that they're over 18. But there's always, in reality, instances where businesses need to keep access to information or want to keep access of information, which is completely fine. I mean, if I'm getting the benefit of one of your amazing newsletters, I want to sign up for that, right? Mm. And so it's about giving consumers that control and transparency.
Choice, yeah.
And stop hiding information in very convoluted, wordy privacy policies and bringing it all to the forefront in a very transparent way. So for your logging system, for your business, if you need to know that this person is a legitimate person, we'll be able to give you a tick, let you know that. If you'd like to keep hold of their email address for your subscription service, we can facilitate that. But what it means is that that consumer has a record saying that they've shared their email address for your subscription service. Mm. And they also have a very easy central control point where they can go in and retract that permissioning. And we automate that sort of compliance and for a business that we can manage the full sensitive data life cycle.
It's quite exciting because now I think about it. So one of the processes, and you would see this when you sign up to things, one of the processes is, putting your details and this was what my app does, it sends you an SMS because that's our way of validating that you're real. You've given us a real mobile number, you've received the SMS, you put in the code, right? There's no reason for me to do that other than to validate the phone number. But actually what I'm doing is validating it's a real person. And if my data boss, is in the choice of some people, a repository of their digital identity, then that's you've already done that. You've validated it for me. So I no longer need to send those SMS verifications. I just need to go, cool, excellent, thank you. You're a member now. You know what I mean? Like it's actually streamlining the process for me and frankly cutting costs because I don't need to send those SMSs anymore.
Definitely. And that's where, we've really been very thoughtful and reimagined how this process could work for businesses, because we knew to get the businesses buying and to get them on board, we needed to cut costs from somewhere and we needed to streamline, automate their compliance so that this isn't an expensive solution to adopt. It's actually quite cost effective. And it builds trust. And a lot of businesses need to be re-establishing trust with their customers at the moment. I mean, the mess that we have in the online environment is...
Let's talk.
Chaotic.
I want you to take your My Data Boss hat off for a minute, right? Because you're just...
Yep.
And I'm rolling the dice here, but I'm pretty confident you're okay to be called a data nerd, okay? You live and breathe this area, right? So let's talk generally about the digital ID and the reason why it's a critical thing for us. And the weird thing is it's an easy sell, is it not? Because we've had Optus, Medicare, Latitude, clubs in recent days. Like, there's been enough examples, real world, millions of people affected examples, that we can say the reason a digital ID is good is because when you buy, sign up, subscribe, whatever it is that you're doing, that company doesn't store your information, and therefore, if they are hacked, because they will be, if they are hacked, in fact, there's no information about you stored that is of any value. Is that that's my, in principle, argument for the digital ID. Am I missing something, or is it that simple?
It's that simple. It's about dramatically reducing that sensitive information in circulation. So they don't have those honeypots across all the different businesses to come in and extract that data. The nuances come where, for different reasons, those organisations need to hold on to the data, but that's where transparency comes into play, and we have to be able to sort of track that, so that if you're an Optus customer and they had to have a copy of that data, that you'd be able to log in and understand and see straight away. The thing that breaks my heart whenever these new breaches arise is the amount of people waking up and being really confused, really scared about, oh shit, did that business have my data? Mm. I was a customer there 10 years ago. Would they still have it? And organisations are taking too long to respond, to let people know whether they've been compromised or not. And it's just not okay. When you're talking about breaches of up to 1 million everyday Australians, that's too many people to sit with that anguish.
How much of a rabbit hole have you been down around the anti-digital ID space?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot in that space, which I think comes back to even, the governments and the research out of some of the banks saying that consumers are going to need choice in regards to this. And it needs to be voluntary, and there needs to be ways to make it inclusive. But at the end of the day, whether you like it or not, digital IDs are here to stay. The physical IDs are no longer fit for purpose in our current digital age. And I think there needs to be an education piece so that people get excited to embrace the change. I mean, there's so many opportunities. We're talking about sort of the security and trust side and the benefits of digital IDs there. But in terms of convenience, I mean, I went to sell a bike on the weekend on an online platform, and the amount of nonsense and fake interest that I had to wade through to try and find a legitimate buyer is absurd. There's no way that we can continue to function in the online landscape the way it is, particularly with the explosion of the use of AI technologies. So I like to sort of be inclusive of all points of view, but I don't think they're going to ultimately have a lot of say in the matter. And it's not just here in Australia, it's a global issue. Mm. It's happening all over the world. They're all moving towards this landscape. Interestingly, Estonia's had a digital ID solution in place for the last 20 years.
Estonia.
Wow. And they say it's been working so well because they did such a good job in educating people on how it's being used.
Now, I mentioned a rabbit hole to you. I may or may not have personally been involved in some serious rabbit holing, okay? And most of it does relate to Senator Malcolm Roberts from One Nation. And look, I'll be frank, I have reached out to try and get him on and talk to him. There's been no response. I'd suggest that's because he's done just 2 minutes of Googling to find out I'm in favour of the thing. But it's weird because I don't actually hear a genuine argument against it. I hear things like the government will have more of your data. The government will be able to, I mean, there's silly examples like, look at whether you own something and deprive you of a certain government benefit or whatever like that. But I don't even think, and again, I'm not asking you to be a government legislation expert, but you've probably read more of the bill than I have, but I don't even think that's the case. I don't think this changes anything about where government data is stored or how. It's simply links them all together through a single kind of ID number, which is a very cautious thing to say given the Australia card debate, but it links them all together so that your app, for example, can simply prove that I am who I am. It doesn't actually create a master database of all our information.
No, nor should it. It should all be obfuscated and not available to access. I mean, within our system, we can never see any of the data that you upload. So encrypted. There's, you know, no interest there in looking at your data, connecting it in any way. But, you know, I've been down the blockchain rabbit hole, and there are some diehard enthusiasts in that space around the self-sovereignty of data, which, you know, I'm a huge advocate of a lot of those principles and concepts. And I think that there will be in the future, and even the, you know, the way that we're designed to be able to bring in the different ways that people can establish their digital ID initially, there'll be fully self-sovereign ways to do it, a bit like how you self-manage your super fund, right? Mm. I think there'll be options.
If you really want to, you'll be able to put it in your own repository of data in that sense. As long as it, in fact, it's going to be a case where as long as it meets the threshold set by the government through this bill, which, by the way, is quite high, because governments don't set low thresholds for data security, do they?
That's right. So, you know, these people, I think, will be accounted for in the emerging ecosystem. I mean, you'd like to cater to that straight away, but, you know, initially it's about getting that sort of that mass coverage. And, you know, they will have the option, self-manage your data. The reason why that's not adopted more broadly as a principle is that it puts individuals at too much critical risk. Mm. So at the moment, you're okay with a, well, you're not okay, but, you know, if a hacker wants to get your information, they're going and digging in a business's sort of server somewhere. Whereas if you were holding that information on your phone, that puts you at a personal risk. And we don't need that for the majority of people. And so that's why most people are quite happy to trust an organisation with that information. And whether that be the government, whether that be someone from the private sector, it's you know, the way that we need to move forward with this to keep everybody as safe as possible.
So as someone who lives and breathes data security, do you trust the government with your data? You know, passport data, tax data, you know, some of the data that's being linked to a digital ID, do you trust it in a government setting, in a government database?
100%. I mean, we kind of have to. We trust them with it already, right? They have it.
That's the thing. This is my biggest argument, is they've already got it, and they're the least likely to be hacked at the moment. Like, there hasn't been a major breach of government data. So, in fact, there's far more trust in government data, or should be far more trust in government data, than there is in any private corporate data security.
Yes. Yes. No, I agree that that's the case. And I mean, if the government solution was available today, we would have it integrated within our system already. Mm-hmm. So as soon as that becomes available, we'll be tapping into that resource. And, you know, hopefully as a business, that's good news for me because it helps keep our cost centers down as well. So there's, you know, many reasons why I'm an advocate for a government based solution to come into our market. It's just, you know, globally, this is a global issue, and you want to be able to, I guess, bring together some of the different aspects of identity service providers. So if you look at the broader landscape as we have it, we have the identity service providers, which is, you know, the government eventually will have, you know, a solution from the banks eventually. Some of the banks here in Australia are working on solutions. You've got the likes of MasterCard and Visa working on solutions. And we have what they call sort of attribute service providers, so providers of specific components of ID information. So that's like your relationship authorization management services, your, you know your business, know your customer services. And so you could end up with a lot of different sort of digital IDs required in all sorts of situations, depending which ones certain organizations want to use. And so there is a need for the capability that we let people choose, but we make it really simple for them. So instead of being overwhelmed with 55 different ID credentials, it's, upload once and you can use that many times across our services if it's been done with a trusted ID service provider.
So back to my data boss, you're not purporting to be the single exclusive source of digital ID. There's a world ahead of us where you might have multiple apps. Is that the way you see it? Or do you see people choosing an app like you choose a bank? What's the long term here with a digital ID in place through government, all that kind of stuff? Am I choosing, I'm putting my faith in my data boss and then hoping that everyone supports it? Or am I likely to have a couple of apps on my phone that help me or validate myself through different businesses and organizations? How does that pan out?
You're likely to sign up to a couple of digital IDs. I think it will be how it rolls out initially and why we have to interoperate and work together in that respect, because we can't get that mass coverage overnight or automatically.
Right.
And so it's the best way to step through. Those organisations that do a good job will come to the forefront. I mean, with my data boss, we're a full sensitive and secure information exchange. So we, identity fraud is one component, one piece of the pie, but we're also tackling all of the other type of sensitive information, like your health records, contracts, financial info, legal notes, because consumers also shouldn't be held to ransom over their most private information. We have our work cut out for us. If there are, great capabilities emerging in a player in the digital ID space, we want to be able to leverage that. We need to band together. No one player can do everything.
In the same way that we can pay by MasterCard, Visa, PayPal, Apple Pay, on different websites in the future, we'll have options to sign in and sign up, subscribe, register through multiple different services. Last question, because I think a lot of people would be, and again, mindful, you're a third party, you're just a business, you're just Greta, right? What if you get hacked?
Yeah, so good question. You can never say 100% that you won't get hacked. If we were to get hacked, all of the information that goes into our system is obfuscated, it's encrypted, it's decentralized in different locations. So they're not going to get anything useful.
Yeah, beautiful. That's the way it should be. That should have been what happened with the Optus hack. It should have been they got a few people's names and phone numbers, but no driver's licenses. They couldn't link the driver's license to a name. They couldn't link that. You know what I mean? Like it should be that. Yeah, it's a challenge to get anything useful.
Yeah, it's that simple, and it's why I get so frustrated that we're not moving faster. Because there's a whole lot that we could be doing right now. And I feel like corporate Australia is hanging back a little bit. And, it breaks my heart and I find it appalling when you hear conversations around organisations budgeting to cover potential fines rather than investing in better security. There's, or people thinking that putting together a privacy policy that they've used ChatGPT to generate that covers them without actually putting any principles into practice.
Yeah,
there's a lot more that can be done right now.
We've got a long way to go before boardrooms understand the importance of this, that it's not just something they can get insurance for. They've actually got to take it seriously. But we're on the path. Maybe we're not running as fast as we want to be. Maybe we need to turn the treadmill up a few notches, but we're getting there. And I think the more we talk about it, the better. So good luck with my data boss. I'll keep in regular contact so we know exactly how you're going and where the world sits, because you know more about this stuff than I do. So I most importantly, I appreciate your time talking about it, Greta.
Great. Thanks, Trevor. Thanks for having me on. It's been great to help educate in this space. We need more and more of it.
It might sound crazy what I'm about to say, but Trevor Long's the world's best techie. He's the kind of guy we picked on at school, and it wasn't fair. It's cool today.
Call him Techie.
Trevor Long is such a nerd. Check him out if you need the proof.
Call him Techie.
Trevor Long knows all gadgets, even though he's just a goose.
Call him Techie.
Trevor Long is just a long. He's the only nerd guy for you.
Call him Techie.
Trevor Long has got something wrong. Being cool, he don't have a clue.
Thank you, Benny. I really appreciate your time. See, I don't know who it was now. Oh, I should look it up, but someone sent me a text or an email about all the AI jingles I was playing a couple of weeks ago. Told me they weren't very good and they sounded too American, and so drop off. Oh, mate, I was just having fun. Just having fun with it. And I probably will continue to have fun with it. We're all allowed to have fun. Anyway, that's Benny and the boys who made that one for me many years ago. Thanks to Geek Bandersloos, who was PR for Vodafone back in the day and then went to Huawei. And she just laughed every time she heard that song, because all she heard was my name. Instead of Clap Along, she heard Trevor Long. So I had the song recorded. Anyway, I alluded in my chat with Greta to the Malcolm Roberts One Nation stand on digital ID. I don't recommend it, but there's 27 minutes online on this bloke's Facebook page, no, YouTube page, about the nightmare threat of digital ID. And if I've ever seen someone poorly execute an argument, it's Malcolm Roberts. Now, I know someone from his staff will probably listen to this now and therefore he'll never come on, but I would absolutely welcome a conversation with this bloke. He's an elected senator. He has power in our government. This one got through the keeper because now it's with the House. But anyway, moving along. I just think most of what he says is, with the greatest of respect and apologies for the language, but it's bullshit. He goes on about governments knowing more about you and depriving you of government services because of one thing or another. Well, look, do you know what I'd like? You know what I'd like? I'd like government agencies to work together closely now without a digital ID to ensure that people aren't defrauding the government. Because if there's someone out there that, I don't know, one arm of government knows they've got a bucket load of money and the other arm of government they're getting Centrelink payments from, I'd like the government to know about that. That's fraud. Okay? So good. But the digital ID isn't at all related to that. It doesn't bring everything together in one database, and it doesn't suddenly give 350,000 public service people, staff, access to all your information. It's just not how it works. It's not how it's written. It's not how it's designed. It's not how it's meant to work. Malcolm, this is meant to stop our data from being poorly held by corporations who have no interest in spending the right amount of money on cybersecurity and therefore are at risk of having our data exposed. A digital ID prevents you from being exposed in the case that a company is hacked. It's brilliant. Like, it makes complete... I am yet to hear an argument against it that doesn't sound like tinfoil hat rubbish. There was a couple of people I reached out to. Yes, I reached out very late. But you know what? If I was working in radio and producing Ray Hadley Morning Show or John Stanley at Night or on the ABC, you ring people now and want them in 3 hours or 2 hours or 1 hour. So it's not unusual that someone would reach out a day out or hours out wanting an interview, just in case that comes up as being a reason they didn't come on. it's not unusual. The fact that you don't make very clear access to your contacts available is a whole other story. But anyway, I tried because I thought I should have some sort of balance, and then I decided I'm not the ABC. Screw balance. I'm not required to have anyone on. This is my show. I'll do what I want. And I, for one, can't wait to use something like my data boss to protect my identity. Simple as that, and I hope you do too. If you have questions about the digital ID, absolutely any question, don't care what it is. Complex, simple, you have an argument against it, you have a belief against it, let's talk about it, okay? Let's talk about it openly, and we'll try and help each other. I want to understand both sides of the argument from the public, but I also want to hear all those questions to help me. See, this is the thing about talkback, right? Questions help me learn. So I hear what real people are thinking out there. I had this conversation with someone last night. They said to me, how's my point of view different when I'm reviewing or reporting on things? And I said, well, a good question. I believe it's that I'm more in touch with more people. I don't claim to be the common man. I just talk to more people. I talk to, let's call it 7 or 8 people on the podcast, probably 8 to 10 on 6PR, and another 4 to 5 on 4BC every single week. So 20-odd people a week, random Australians who have questions about technology, from buying a printer to a TV to complaining about something or other. And so I get a sense of what real people need, want, and are doing out there. That's all I'm saying. So I want to learn more about your views on digital ID. So let's light up the phones. 0477-657-657. Send me a text or a WhatsApp to 0477-657-657 and let's unpack the digital ID together over the weeks and months ahead. There is a lot more to do in this space. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for joining me from London. We'll push forward with more news from Apple later in the week on Two Blokes Talking Tech. All the details of the Apple launch will be at EFTM.com, and I'll be on the Today Show at 7:50 on Wednesday morning. Thanks for listening, folks. Talk to you next week.
EFTM. You're listening to the EFTM podcast.
EFTM.